This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. The Reverend John C. Welch is chairman of the board of the Gamaliel Foundation based in Chicago. He's also the vice president and dean of students at Pittsburgh Theological Seminary. Reverend Welch is the keynote speaker for this year's Isaac Banquet in Kalamazoo. Reverend Welch, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Let's introduce you a little bit to our audience by telling them about some of these organizations who you're involved with. Tell us about the Gamaliel Foundation.
Well, the Gamaliel Foundation has been around for almost 30 years now. And it is a network of affiliate organizations like Isaac in 17 different states. We have a little over 60 affiliate organizations. So the organization here in Pittsburgh, where I served as president for a few years, it's called the Pennsylvania Interfaith Impact Network. So we're a network of organizations that do congregational-based community organizing and leadership development.
The theme of this year's Isaac Banquet here in Kalamazoo is On the Road to Justice. From where you sit, how far have we traveled down that road to justice?
It's a very long road. And I wouldn't say we've made it very far. I think we've made it down the path of ways, but then we've seemed to have regressed a bit. But it's a very long road. So I think we have a very long ways to go.
What are some examples where you say we've regressed?
Well, just one clear example is after all of the work that was done throughout the civil rights movement for equality, and as evidenced in affirmative action practices that resulted from that work, we now find ourselves faced with state institutions unraveling those policies and assuming that we have a fair playing field. And likewise, with the recent actions of the Supreme Court in challenging some of the statutes in the Voting Rights Act, again, assuming that we have a fair playing field. So much of the hard work of the civil rights leaders is now being called to question and is being challenged.
So if we're going to keep traveling down that road to justice, what are some things you would like to see done?
One of the things I think is going to be very important is to have a very well-educated electorate. And voter engagement is always going to be important. I think it's important for people on the ground to understand just how long-standing or the long-term ramifications of one's vote is. When you vote to put somebody in office, some of the policies that they approve or legislate can have significant ramifications for years, maybe even decades. So it's important that people are informed of the duties of the people who they elect and the impact that they can have on our well-being.
Is that maybe a little easier to do now than it was, say, we're speaking here on Friday, and it's right before the 50th anniversary of the March at Selma. And I'm wondering if you think it is a little easier now to educate and get information out to voters, given that there's more of a network of groups like some of the ones you're involved with, that there is technology which allows mass dissemination of information. Is it somewhat easier now to at least bring people up to speed on the issues?
There are fewer impediments, I think, than there were decades ago, but there is also an abundance of media outlets as well as different forms for which people can be informed. So I think the challenge is the integrity of the information that's being shared and the onus on people to understand which sources to go to get credible information. So I think that's the 21st century challenge. So on the one hand, it's easier, but I think on the other hand, it can be a little bit more challenging.
How intertwined do you see issues of justice, economic justice and some of those things, education, and the issue of race? How tied are those things still together?
Oh, they're like Siamese twins. They're almost inseparable. Everything that we're dealing with these days still boils down to the race issue. And so, you know, one of the biggest fallacies to have been stated once President Obama was elected was that we're in a post-racial society, but evidence shows, particularly from the research of the Poverty Law Center, Southern Poverty Law Center, that once he was elected, gun sales increased, ammunition sales increased, hate crime groups increased. You know, so we're still dealing with a racialized society. And as it pertains to education and jobs, African Americans are the largest sector of the unemployed. We are the largest sector of the undereducated. We are the largest sector of the incarcerated. And those things are all intertwined. And so you have to look at the policies that have been created to perpetuate the impoverishment of African Americans and the undereducating by way of reducing resources in public schools, and the high crime that we find in these impoverished communities. Some might want to say is due to, you know, questionable character and behavior of those, but I think you also have to look at the conditions for which folks have been forced to live in. And we know that the whole idea of human instinct is going to be survival of the fittest. So if you don't provide jobs for folks, they're going to find other ways to get or to make money. And they seem to do that by way of selling drugs, which leads to incarceration, high incarceration rates, long sentencing, you know, the whole nine. So it's all intertwined with race.
Is the idea of a post-racial society attainable in, say, yours or my lifetime?
Well, that would assume that you know how old I am and I know how old you are.
Okay, I'm 47. Let's go with me for now.
I do have hope in that. You look at the millennial generation, for example. Many of them are not have not been spoiled by the toxicity of racism, so to speak. So with the whole Black Lives Matter movement as a result of Michael Brown and Eric Garner, there you saw a wide swatch of people of various ethnicities, blacks, whites, different ages. But the most important thing is the young college and high school kids are really moving, and they're not necessarily dividing themselves among racial lines as many folks in our age group and before us have done.
It was 10 years ago this fall that there was a big announcement here in Kalamazoo, a program called the Kalamazoo Promise, which gives free college tuition to graduates of Kalamazoo Public Schools. If they go to a university or community college in the state, it's been expanded to some private schools. Many cities came along and followed suit with similar programs, including Pittsburgh, your hometown. I'm wondering if you see these programs as the sort of things which move the needle significantly and do perhaps provide opportunities which have not been there in the past.
They do. They create wonderful opportunities. But one of the things that I think sort of undermined that effort is I'm not quite sure how things were designed in the Kalamazoo Promise, but here in Pittsburgh, they're for students that are part of the Pittsburgh public school system. And, you know, there are certain requirements that have to be met in order to be eligible, attendance and GPA. But what tends to undermine that, or what can undermine that, are the whole social mobility policies that are in place. So when you have gentrification taking place within the city, as people are moving back from the suburbs, the population within those public schools is increasing and is becoming more and more, is being filled with more and more people that have higher socioeconomic status. Migration is coming into the city. The poor African Americans are being pushed out of the city and so into districts that are poorer and poorer. And so those students don't benefit anymore from the Pittsburgh Promise, or cannot benefit. So I see a sort of a diluting of that mission just by the whole migration of more affluent back into the city to improve the tax bases of cities like Pittsburgh, while the poor are being flushed out into public housing complexes outside of the city. And so those students don't are no longer in the Pittsburgh Public School District.
They're pushed out because they can no longer afford to live where they lived before people started moving back in?
Right. So as new development is taking place, you have the movement of some public housing units are being replaced with market housing and some subsidized housing. Well, the rate of market to subsidize is a high ratio. So you don't have the same number of people that once lived in public housing in those areas still living in that complex. They've been moved elsewhere, and so they no longer can attend those public schools because they live outside of the district. And so then you have a different population of students that can qualify for the promise.
Of course, you know, part of the goal here, I suppose, is also to have more of a mix in the public schools of an urban area like Pittsburgh, perhaps more middle-class families moving back. So how do you achieve that mix where maybe some of those families that can be lured back to the city do come, and at the same time, the people are not forced out and don't have to move somewhere where they can't take advantage of the promise? How do we get to that place?
That's a good question, and I think it's one that needs to be seriously addressed. One of the things you have to look at is what a fair ratio of public of subsidized to market housing would be within any particular development. You also have to look at why it is that people are on subsidized housing to begin with. So jobs, is for the most part, is at the source of that, but then you have to look at the quality of jobs. So one of the issues we've been fighting here in Pittsburgh is we've been battling the largest employer in Western Pennsylvania, the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. And they, along with others like Walmart and fast food chains, have low wages. And so their wages that are quite substandard. And so people are not able to live in market rate apartments. They have to live in subsidized housing. UPMC, for example, has the largest number of people on public assistance in the state of Pennsylvania. So unless you provide high-quality jobs for people where they can afford to live in housing that is not substandard or not subsidized, then you're going to have people dependent on subsidized housing, which is determined based on where the government wants to track people. So it's a good question. I think it has a complex solution, but it's one that we have to certainly put a lot of attention to.
Reverend Welch, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for this opportunity.
Reverend John C. Welch is chairman of the Gamaliel Foundation. He's also the vice president and dean of students at Pittsburgh Theological Seminary. Reverend Welch will be the keynote speaker for this year's Isaac Banquet in Kalamazoo. You can find more details at WMUK.org. West Southwest airs Mondays and Thursdays. It can be heard at 9:30 in the morning and 3:30 in the afternoon both days. Links with more information, extended versions of interviews, and past programs can be found at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.